The new year invites a review of past years. In this first week of 1992, we're kicking off a four-part series by our rock and roll historian, Ed Ward. He's decided to go back 10, 20, 30, and 40 years to see what was happening back then musically. For starters, the sounds of 1952.
Although it's really pointless to speculate exactly when rock and roll was born as such, there's really no question that in 1952 it was already kicking at the slats of its cradle. By 1952, the post-war recovery of the entertainment business was well underway, and a bunch of independent labels were rushing into the black and country markets and cleaning up. The pop charts may have had the same old crooners and orchestras on them, but around the edges things were getting weird and modern. Country music had been thrust into a new era by the uncompromising songwriting of Hank Williams, who would die on the very last day of the year, and by the enduring popularity of jazz-tinged Western swing. The two tendencies combined to make one of the year's top country hits.
I didn't know God made honky-tonk angels. I might have known you. Never make a wife. You gave up the only one that ever loved you and went back to the wild side of life.
Along with Webb Pierce's 1952 hit Backstreet Affair, Hank Thompson's Wild Side of Life dealt with the urban realities many country folk were contending with, a life where mother, Bible, and farming had been supplanted with dirt, drink, and double dealing. The golden era of country music was only beginning in 1952, but the rhythm and blues scene was going berserk. Chicago, Memphis, New Orleans, and Los Angeles were throwing out more good talent than anybody could keep track of. Typical of the quality of 52's R&B scene was the number one R&B record of the year. Lloyd Price's Lottie Miss Claudie not only had the best band New Orleans was capable of assembling, it also had a piano introduction by nobody less than Fats Domino, who himself had a big hit with Goin' Home. Memphis was going insane.
Told me that you would leave me here in tears. But now you're gone and I seem like you.
Forget the out-of-tune piano. Johnny Ace was the first teen idol for young black girls, and My Song launched a career that would only last 2 years until his mysterious death, allegedly playing Russian roulette. Ace was part of the Beale Street scene in Memphis, and his running buddies included Bobby Blue Bland and B.B. King, the latter of whom hit in 52 with his first record, 3 O'Clock Blues. Memphis was so hot in 1952 that finally, the man who owned the studio where most of the hits were recorded, Sam Phillips, decided to stop supplying labels in L.A. and Chicago with hits and put them out himself. In November, he released Blues in My Condition by Jackie Boy and Little Walter on the Sun Records label. It was a horrible record, and it died instantly, but Sun would become important real soon. Also around the end of the year, a couple of Jewish teenagers in Los Angeles nervously turned a song over to Willie Mae Thornton, a vocalist who was working with bandleader Johnny Otis. Would this be their big hit?
You ain't-
course, it was. And within a couple of years, Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller and Sam Phillips and a kid who was still in high school named Elvis Presley would all change history. But in 1952, only the foundations of rock and roll were being laid. Future stars were making their first records, the 45 RPM single with the big hole was just catching on, and if you lived in Philadelphia and had a television, you could come home from school and watch a brand new program called American Bandstand with its host, middle-aged Bob Horn. Rock and roll was on its way, and although nobody could have guessed it in 1952, it was already too late to stop it.
Ed Ward is co-author of Rock of Ages, The Rolling Stone History of Rock and Roll, and he writes for the Austin Chronicle.